Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Hello and welcome to our podcast, Table Manners, with me, Jessie Ware, and my dear mother, Lenny.
Hi.
Hi, Mum. How are you?
I'm all right. It's nice to do one in daylight.
It is.
Yeah.
We're doing a lunch today.
Yeah.
For a woman who, weirdly, I've been likened to a lot with singing, and who I think has a wonderful voice, so, and has one of the most kind of known pop songs of the last kind of 20 years.
Which one's that one?
And I miss you like the deserts miss the rain.
Oh, I love that
and
song.
And I miss you. Yeah, see, everyone knows that song.
Is that Everything But the Girl?
That's Everything But the Girl. However, we have the singer from Everything But the Girl, who is Tracy Thorn. Tracy Thorn has got her own solo project under her own name and has had an album out this year. It's either called Record or Record. I'm not sure. Potato, patata.
Well, it's either a verb or a noun.
Yes. And she's also a novelist. She wrote a memoir in 2013, which is called Bedsit Disco Queen, How I Grew Up and Tried to Be a Pop Star. Her last book was all about singing and singers, and I'm very interested about that, being a singer, but also kind of she talks about the technicalities and what makes a good singer. And yeah, I'd like to delve further into that. What is on the menu today, Mum?
I've made a kind of Vietnamese dish, which is salmon poached in a lemongrass and ginger broth with noodles and greens and vegetables.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Light.
Light, very light.
And what's for pud?
It's a chocolate truffle tort that Alex made with raspberries and cream.
And a meringue base.
Yeah.
And then we zested some tangerine into the cream, which actually hasn't really worked, but
it's fine.
Mum was trying to look for her off rose water that she used. She went, I used it 10 years ago.
No, I've never opened it. It's brand new, so I don't know where it is.
Yeah, okay, cool. Tracy Thorn coming up on Table Manners.
I don't think we've done very well on that introduction, darling. It's bloody your mouth's not working.
No. Would you like to have a go?
No. Would you like a glass of wine? Or would you like gin?
We didn't know whether you were going to do that, so like, we're down if you are. Okay, amazing. Cheers.
Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers, Mum.
Cheers, darling.
My nephew, James, I promised I'd mention him.
Oh, really?
who's like 33. He said to me, have you heard this brilliant new Jessie Ware podcast?
Is that... And so, were you already booked for this, by then?
No, no, hadn't even...
Oh, my God,
so serendipitous. We were chatting about that. He was telling me all about it. I had heard about it. I hadn't listened to them at that stage. And then I got the call on my way home on Thursday. Do you want to be... So I was like texting him going, Jess, you won't believe it, but I've just been up.
Oh, that's so nice.
It was so cool.
Well, is it
anyway,
James?
Your biggest fan. Yeah, absolutely loving the
well,
podcast.
Well, I mean, he may be my biggest fan, but I have seen you tweet me sometimes.
Yes, I have.
You've been there from the start, Tracy. Always on Twitter. I always remember, like, you'd always be really nice after, like, a Jules Holland performance or something, which is the most petrifying. I don't know. You've obviously done Jules.
I have, and it is scary, isn't it?
It gets a little easier once Jules is the sweetest man
in the world. I think he's really good, actually, at just making you feel at ease. And I'm pretty hard to for these, especially when I don't do the performing live bit anymore. But when I still used to do that, I still used to find Jules terrifying.
But you...
Well, I mean, just because
you don't need
Yeah, I don't particularly need to. It was never my favourite bit. So I had a break for a while, and then I've come back to, you know, recording again. But I sort of feel I'm going to just do the bits I love now.
Is it
that's the virtue of getting older, and you can just choose to.
You're not old.
Is it record or record?
I say record, I think, but okay. I don't. I mean, it's kind of meant to be a bit ambiguous, so it could be either.
But you're still making music.
Yeah.
But with no intention to perform it live.
No, so which I find quite liberating, because then, especially with this record, I didn't have that worry about, okay, so this is very electronic, you know, how are we going to reproduce this live? Because we did all that, you know, back with Everything But The Girl in the 90s, and I did all that. How do you translate an electronic record into being live? You must... these conversations. How much of it do you want to be live? How much do you rely on program stuff? So to me, it's quite a relief not to have to even have that thought in my head. I can just do whatever I want. Mm. And also when you're singing a vocal, not thinking, oh, this one's going to be a bugger to sing. You know, that high note I'm singing now. Do I really want to do that? Because I'm going to have to do that every night.
I hear you. I've absolutely buggered myself from doing such high bloody songs that are great. And you've got a bit of auto-tune in the studio. How do you feel about auto-tune? Have you ever used it?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's been used on my vocal, probably when I'm out of the room. I mean, I remember Ben produced a singer, I'm not going to say who, a few years ago, and when she went out of the room, they used a bit of auto-tune, and then she came back and said, it's sounding amazing, and he'd be like, we've got this new compressor, the magic compressor,
but you know,
makes it sound amazing.
Auto-tune is when they tune up your vocal.
You know, I think it's useful to fix the odd note.
Yeah, that's...
So stay if you're doing that thing of going over and over and over again till you kill it, stone dead.
And if
dead.
You've got a killer performance...
Yeah.
And
I think, why not fix it?
I'm interested because you have this book about singing.
Yeah. And I talked a bit about auto-tune there because I kind of brought it up as one of these things that now people have an opinion out about, even if they don't know much about it. Mm. And also people will say, you know, oh, I don't like auto-tune, but I like this record. And you think, well, there's probably a bit of auto-tune on that record. It's like they think they can tell. And I think what they mean often is that kind of sound when it gets used, you know, to death on a vocal. So you can hear that sort of slightly plasticky sound of a voice that's been put through it. But, you know, again, when that's used deliberately, it creates its own sound. And sometimes I quite like that. If you're doing it deliberately to get a sort of slightly artificial effect, then...
I think it's quite again, fun. It like old Flo Rida. I mean, he really... You know, and T-Pain, whatever. But I don't know. My producer of my first record, Dave, was like a purist, and he wouldn't let me have it on the first record. he called it wide tuning if I was a bit out of tune, and it was fine. And and then I worked with loads of LA people, and they were like, literally, they just stick it on. And loads of the top liners now, they will go and try and work out melodies with huge amounts of auto-tune on.
Yeah.
To try, so they don't feel embarrassed they're trying to like work out a melody and they're singing to a kind of riff or whatever, but anyway. But I thank you very much for being so lovely about me and to me on Twitter. I've always just like, it's always been amazing having like your name pop up. Aww. And kind of, but I just so you will never perform live again or never
well,
say
I don't
never
know. Yeah, I'm never say never. I mean, you know, things change, and what I'd need now is a kind of reason to want to do it that would feel like a new reason. Because I did it for all those years. And again, you know, I used to suffer from stage fright, but I had the sort of motivation to get through that. Mm. But, you know, that drive to prove myself, get out there on a stage, be this kind of person. Mm. So I'd need something to happen that would make me think, okay, that's a good reason to do it. I don't want to get into doing it just in that slightly routine way.
So you never enjoyed it?
Yes, I did enjoy it. Yeah, I did. But not always.
What,
and
because
not
of the
without
stage fright?
Yeah, I think so. Also, there's bits of it that are just boring, don't you think? I mean, speaking honestly,
I mean, I've just
again having done it for years, you know, it does become a bit. It's like the routine bit of it, doing the same songs over and over and over again.
I don't know how things changed for you from after post Missing coming out.
Yeah,
did it just go kind of stratospheric? Like it was relentless, or was it because you've been in Everything But The Girl since the 80s?
Yeah, and we started in about 83. So then I carried on, and I was still touring until like 2000. So that's, you know, 17 years of it. Quite a lot of albums and a lot of tours.
I don't know if I didn't know this, but the you're a duo in Everything But The Girl, and the gentleman in the duo, Ben, is your husband.
Yes. Yeah, so all those...
Were you always going out?
Yeah, right from the beginning. Yeah, yeah. We got together on our first day at university. And
Hull.
Yeah. And
what
within 3 months, we'd sort of formed a band together. So, yeah, we were both doing English. He was doing English and drama. Right. You did English, didn't you?
I did do English, so, yeah. I wasn't very good at it. It really put me off reading, to be honest.
Oh, no,
it's
terrible,
isn't it? Oh. It's really bad. But
So you know, for a while it was fantastic. You know, those years of just, we did all our travelling together. You know, it was lovely. But I do think there came a point. And then we had kids. You know, the other thing that happened when I stopped touring, you know, it was partly because we had kids. And so then that developed another whole part of our life together. So now, okay, so we're in a band together and we're a couple and we've got kids, we're parents. So it just suddenly seemed like too much together. So
when did
we've
you
kind
have,
of extracted a little bit of our lives
right.
apart. Which
when did you
sense.
Have your first child then?
I had twins in 98, so they're 20 now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
then we carried on touring a little bit, took them with us on one tour. 18 months old they were.
How was that?
A nightmare, actually. I mean, I hear people say they managed to make it work, and I'm full
You're
of admiration.
So similar, you've done the same thing.
This is I
found it hard.
Yeah, so I just came back from touring
you've
with
done
my
it,
daughter.
Taking yours with you.
Yeah, but I didn't have twins.
No.
And I had my brother coming along to help, so I think like we had an extra pair of hands.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether you had a nanny.
We took a nanny.
You'd have to because you're both on stage. Who's going
to
look after the
And
babies?
I remember thinking, this will be fine. You know, this is fine. You can have a nanny. But then during the day, you know, the kids wanted to be with me, obviously. So I'd be sort of taking them out to the nearby park, and then you'd get on the bus and go to the next venue. Then you'd take them to the sound check and let them play on stage. That
That's
would be
exactly
fun.
Exactly what you've
Then they'd go and have their tea backstage.
You'd kiss them goodnight.
Then I would take them back to the hotel and try and get them settled to bed. And then I'd rush back.
You did that.
Well, I tried to. I think I said,
right, mum's got to work.
But then there's that moment when you find yourself back in the dressing room, you've got to put all the slap on your face and go out on stage and be jazz hands thing. And I found that quite weird, like going between being mum and then pop star.
That's exactly
so
that I've
go.
Just
you
I'm
understand.
Exhausted.
Can you hit the dishwasher?
Because Alex stopped it. So funny, because I finished my tour on Sunday.
Yeah.
She didn't come to the UK. She came to a bit of it, to Manchester, where our family was, but... I completely understand what you're talking about. It's this thing where, you know, please tell me if you disagree, but like, I feel like we're indulged as it's a job that's rather indulgent.
Yeah.
It's hard work, but it's indulgent.
Yeah, no,
and
I think so.
You're indulged to be ready to get into this zone.
Yeah.
But when you have a kid,
yeah,
you feel guilty if you're trying to get into that zone. You're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. And it's like, I felt like a headless chicken most of the time.
I felt like I just wasn't doing either job very well.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, again, I'm not sitting here trying to put you off touring with your kid. I think you should, because if you can make it work. But I went through those stages of feeling like I'm not giving them any attention and I'm out on stage with my head all over the place. And so it's tricky.
So that was quite a big factor to kind of
stop. So it was. But also, don't forget, at that stage, I'd been doing it for a long time. Yeah. So I had that luxury of thinking, okay, do you know what? I've done it. We'd had the whole hit with Missing and everything. I think I felt... I've sort of proved everything I need to prove. If I have a break now, it's like...
What are your girls doing now?
So they're both at uni now. One's off doing biomedical science, whatever that might be. And then the other one's an art student.
Fabulous.
So they've decided to be the polar opposite
of each
other.
Do either of them want to get into music?
No, I don't think so.
And
but then we've got a younger son as well who's 17 and he's in a band and plays the guitar all day long. So we'll see.
What I know about everything the girl... forgive me if I get anything wrong.
No, don't worry.
But you kind of started as this rather, it was quite jazzy.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I mean, Ben's dad was a jazz musician, a little bit of that came from him. But it was also that time, it was like the early 80s, in the wake of, you know, punk and post-punk coming along, sort of stirring up rock music.
Which you adored.
Got me started. But then there was this sort of movement to like bring in all sorts of other influences. So, you know, people were listening to jazz and ska and reggae and all sorts of things. So it became like this real melting pot for a while. And that's kind of what we came out of. Not about rock and roll particularly, all about all sorts of other things.
Was it weird for you then to have... And I know you've talked about the fact that you were experimenting with dance and beats... before Missing was such a hit.
Yeah.
But was there a frustration with the fact that Missing was such a hit with this kind of... Was it the remix?
Todd Terry's remix was the one that...
Did that... Because I know people are very nice, but I've got this remix of this song called Running, which I'm very proud of. And the remix is far bigger than the original. And I'm like, and I love the remix, but, and it really annoys me when people go, I love Running, the remix. And I'm like, I shouldn't be annoyed because it's bloody good. But I'm like, you should listen to the original. But actually, your original was pretty similar to the Todd Terry one.
It was. And I think also, you know, we'd been around the block so many times by then. And we'd had a couple of hits already. So there was always that. And then our career had taken a downturn. So honestly, when Missing came along, it was just like a kind of massive late bonus. When a late unexpected goal. We weren't expecting
when
it.
When you say taken a downturn, like what?
No, musically things had tailed off a bit, sort of late 80s, early 90s, and then we had a bit of a resurgence, and then, you know, suddenly out of the blue a massive hit. So I remember just thinking, this is a bonus, didn't expect this. So I didn't mind that it was a remix. I thought whatever it, you know, works for people.
And did things change drastically once that came out, kind of with being recognised and kind of your life, did it change?
It did. I can remember that period, you know, for the sort of couple of years after that was the only period when I remember feeling like I was sort of living that kind of pop star life and people were sort of reacting to us like we were pop stars. And again, I think because we've been doing it for quite a long time, we just kind of thought, this is fun, let's enjoy this.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah, it was good.
Where does Everything But the Girl come from?
It comes from a furniture shop in Hull.
Oh, how funny.
Quite literally. So this was their slogan, painted in huge letters on the front. So the idea, I think, was, you know, they can sell you everything but the girl to make your home complete.
Oh, how
so you're setting
cool.
up it. So it's like corny, and we thought it was funny. We thought we were going to make one single. So we thought, well, let's have a kind of slightly funny throwaway name. We won't have to be explaining this for 35 years, will we?
Such a good name.
So I don't know whether if we'd known we were going to be explaining it for so long, we'd have come up with something.
I've just got to tell you about Antonis. He's a Greek friend.
Yeah.
I've got a house in Greece. Ooh, and so I've got lots of Greek friends. Only a little house. It's not grand. But Antonis gave me that record and said, you know, I do think Jesse and Tracy have very, very similar... similar about both of them.
People make this, like, connection with me and you.
Right.
Jesse's very flattered.
Oh, yeah. God, I'm very flattered.
No.
So Antonis gave me this record when they stayed here, and when he found out you were coming for lunch, he said he was ready to fly over just to see you. And he said that he ran some sort of fan club in Greece for you, Antonis Gilkos, and he wondered if you'd remember him.
Do you know what? That name does actually sound
familiar.
Okay.
He DJs, and he's a graphic designer and DJs, but he still adores you.
Fantastic.
So he was very, very excited.
Oh, well, say hi.
Yeah, I'll say hi. Hello. So then he bought me the album, which is How It Introduced Me to You.
Okay. Oh, well,
so, and you're a fantastic lyricist.
Thank you.
Just
Thank
wonderful.
You. And I wanted to ask about lyrics because...
You mean how to write?
Please can you tell me how to write. But I've always been really annoyed by this question that I got asked a lot, especially when it was quite public that I was getting married around the second record. And they were like, you make such melancholy.
Yeah, I've heard people.
Music.
I've seen people ask you that. How can you write songs now you're happy? And I'm like, oh, that makes me cross. Actually,
because
does that make you cross?
I just think that it's such a simple kind of. It just makes no sense to me. Because
no, it doesn't. Well, also it diminishes the idea that you're a creative artist with imagination and ideas in your head.
Well, I wondered whether you've ever had that, because
people are aware that you were
in a relationship with
how
Ben,
can
and
you
you're
write about it's like, well, what? So all I can talk about is what happened in my life. You know, I think you take experiences from everywhere,
totally.
And things people tell you, memories that things might have happened to you in the past, or you know, use your imagination, don't you?
There was something you said in your book about it was about you in your first band.
Mm.
And you sung in a wardrobe, was
inside
it?
The wardrobe, yeah.
Yeah, and you like hid in the wardrobe because you didn't want people to see
you.
Yeah,
I mean, I was still only about sort of 17 and, you know, in my first band and in someone's bedroom rehearsing. And I hadn't sung at all at that point. I was the guitarist.
All right.
So they said, you know, can, and our singer didn't turn up one day. So they said, can you sing? And I said, well, I don't know. I've never tried. So, but I said I certainly can't do it if you're looking at me, so I'll get inside the wardrobe and I'll take the microphone and literally shut the door behind me.
So do you play instruments?
Yeah, I play guitar and a bit of piano. I mean, I play enough to write songs.
Did you learn
too.
As a child?
I did. I had piano lessons.
I wish Jessie had had
Well,
them.
I don't know. It's no help.
I don't know. I think it's helped me start an idea at home better.
I'm rubbish now. I mean, all I learned to play as a child was scales and then a bit of Mozart. You know, that's no use. So
especially when you're like into jazz.
Yeah, so now I sit down and I pick out these hopeless little chords. But that's just a start. I just think...
Do you
That's
still
all
play?
I need. Well, that only to do that, only to write songs, really. I sit at the piano.
Jessie, if only could do that.
I know, well, I've been intending, but then, like, everyone... For a Christian Jewish mother, you did fail me, actually.
Really
you
got
me
no an music alcoholic lessons?
Keys, piano teacher.
What about singing lessons? Have you had singing lessons?
Yeah, I did, actually. I had classical singing lessons.
Did you?
Yeah, but just because it was the only option at school.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Grade 8 Jane Humphreys without reading music.
Yeah, but I mean, and also couldn't go and do the grade 8s because I couldn't do the... So I think I had to do like the Trinity version or Guildhall, whichever one's easier to get the grade. I did. And it wasn't that I was bothered about getting that title.
Yeah.
It was more... I think it's really helped me with kind of how I look after my voice.
I was going to say, it must be useful. You must have learned stuff.
Yeah, I think it was helpful for projection and kind of just... Even though, actually, I'm pretty bad with my breathing on stage, I definitely can... I've got better because I've realised that it's a marathon and you can't lose your voice.
And that was always my terror. That was the big thing. Just, it's going to go, you know. It's because I've basically got a kind of... The good thing about my voice is its intimacy. You know, I'm good up close. I'm good sounding like I'm whispering in your ear. So then having to project and do that night after night, it used to put such a strain. And I would just stand there thinking, it's going to go in a minute, it's going to go in a minute. And it hardly ever does, but you just...
Yours did once.
That mindset. Mine did once. Yeah. Very early on, I think, and that's why it stayed with me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
You grew up here, just outside of North London.
Yeah, suburbs.
What was dinner time at your family's like? Did you eat together? What did you eat?
You know, so when I was a little kid, so we're talking 1960s, I grew up eating completely standard British food of that time. So a really narrow range of food. Mm-hmm. So literally lamb chops, liver and bacon, steak and kidney pie, fish and chips, a roast on Sunday.
Got it.
So that was it. Literally nothing fancy, no frills, and not really anything you'd call foreign food, in inverted commas. And then in the 70s, I think my mum got a little bit more into sort of convenience things. I remember her getting a plug-in deep-fat fryer. So we started having more fried things.
That
was considered a bit of a sort of step up, because we thought that was a bit more sophisticated, you know, having the fryer.
Was it mostly kind of chips that you were frying?
Yeah,
fish? I don't know. What? Yeah, I've never had a deep...
My
grandma had a deep fat fryer.
She had a chip pan.
I think it was mostly chips.
There's nothing like home-cooked chip.
No, they're very good. But what it meant was, growing up, I didn't experience any other types of food. And I was a bit of a fussy child anyway, so, you know, I grew up eating quite a narrow range.
Fussy eater?
Yeah.
What did you have for dinner last night? Now, you know, you're a pop star, you've probably travelled the world, eaten a lot of different foods all over the world, I presume. Yeah. How's your taste buds now?
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, so last night was an almost typical one, which was me cooking for six people because it was all the kids and one of the girls' boyfriends was around as well. And so I did this kind of meal, which is the epitome of what I've cooked really for the last few years, which is basically a meal that will suit everyone, even though everyone kind of wants to be eating something different.
Yeah.
So I cooked I grilled a few steaks, put them on a plate in the middle. Mm-hmm. There was a salad on the table. There was some tomato pasta on the table. There was some broccoli, some mushrooms, and some chips. So literally the six people...
Oh, it was like a buffet.
Yeah, well, but that's the six people around the table. Probably all had something slightly different. Two of them are vegetarian, so they had the pasta and the broccoli.
Who were the vegetarians?
My daughter and her boyfriend.
Okay.
Me and Ben like had a steak and a salad. The other two had more chips. Do you know what I mean? So it felt like we're all eating together. I mean, I've got really good at doing that. So I do a meal where everything comes to the table in separate things. Six people might be eating. They might all
that
be...
That sounds
but
like a pain in the arse for you.
Well, but it's just a way of meaning you all eat together.
Is that important to you then?
Because, yeah, it is. So I've always done that with the kids and we've always had dinner time. But it doesn't mean I'm cooking anything necessarily particularly fancy, but it just means we all sit together. And it means, I suppose I do put in that bit of extra effort to accommodate people's
It's the ritual being able to have... And
it is,
also it's that
like
chance
it.
To have... A conversation.
I mean, everyone sits and chats, and yeah, so we've always done that. But so that's the kind of that's my cooking now. It's those sorts of family meals.
Do any of your family do the cooking, or is it always you the cook in the family?
I am pretty much the cook. Ben does it occasionally, and he's perfectly capable of cooking a meal. But I think we've just slipped into that thing that couples do, where you each have your sort of areas of responsibility.
You're a Londoner. Do you eat out a lot?
Not masses, I don't think. When the kids were younger, bizarrely, we had a ritual routine where we'd eat out once a week because it was that thing of doing...
We never
called it that because that's such an awful phrase, but we did at least...
It really is.
It's so horrible.
It's bloody annoying.
It puts pressure on you. But I think we did just think there has to be one evening a week when we leave the house together and sit down and someone else does the cooking. And it was brilliant. And we wouldn't go anywhere fancy necessarily, maybe just around the corner to the local. Yeah. Now they're a bit older and life is a bit freer anyway, and quite often it's just us on our own anyway eating dinner. There isn't quite such that feeling that, you know, we've got to go out.
I would have thought maybe you'd go out a bit more now.
Well, I think we will eventually. We'll get back into the swing of it once they've properly left home. The evenings now are so kind of unpredictable, whether people are in or out. I never know who's in for dinner. It's quite hard to plan
anything.
Sounds like
you.
Quite hard to plan.
But are there any particular restaurants that you absolutely love? Whether they're local or...
There was a lovely place, annoyingly, that's closed down in Camden called Market, which was a really nice restaurant on Parkway. And it was like a sort of New York restaurant, and it had that vibe of being like a proper neighbourhood restaurant, but like really good food and, you know, bare brick walls and quite simple.
It wasn't the meaty place, was it?
Wasn't
I think
massively
I've had a Barnsbury...
It might have been a bit meaty.
Chop, what are they called? Barnsbury. I think I have... Yeah, Barnsley chop.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a modest kind of place. It just did.
Yeah, that was really nice. I mean, for a proper slap up, you know, let's go out for dinner, the Wolseley is amazing.
Love the Wolseley.
Can't beat the Wolseley. Whoa.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hope you like coriander because there's a lot of.
Sorry,
so much. No, not at all.
No, that's amazing.
This is really good, Mum.
Thank you, Jessie.
Mum, will you just tell the listeners what we are having and Tracy?
It's salmon poached with lemongrass and ginger with, I don't know, you add all fish sauce and things, and then vegetables, a bit kind of Vietnamese thing.
Delicious.
Do you like
it? Really
it
is
fantastic.
Delicious.
Fantastic,
good.
Thank you. This is not what I'd normally be having for a Monday lunch.
It can work on a night that the vegetarians aren't in the house, maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
So how did the Massive Attack collaboration come about? Because I guess you were doing similar things at the same time. And
well, kind of, although I mean them asking me at that moment still felt like an odd combination. You know, we weren't at that time considered to be part of that dance world particularly, and they were, even though they were trying to branch out and, you know, end up being the group they are now.
So had Missing come out yet?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. So I did the work with Massive, and that, I think, came out and then Missing being a hit at the same time. Because I can remember being in New York with Massive doing a little promo trip. And I remember being in the back of a cab with them and G saying to me, I just was at a club last night and I heard this remix of missing, you know, did you know that was out there? And I was like, yeah, yeah, obviously. But that, so that was before it had been a hit or anything. So it was all sort of around the same time.
Did you tour with them a lot?
Only a little bit. They did a few gigs in the UK and Europe, and I turned up and would just sort of come on and do my turn. Because, you know, they had that sort of sound system thing going on where they'd have, you know, guest vocalists.
That's the kind of dream. It's things. Like this no
turn up
pressure.
And do one song. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever miss singing live? I know you've decided you don't want to do it, but is there any kind of... Do you... Like when you see other performances, you kind of, do you get that nostalgia?
No, I don't
being
actually.
On the stage?
I mean, I go and see other people, and I do sit there before they come on, thinking, "Oh, I wonder if this will be the moment that I'll think." And actually, I sit watching other people, going, "Oh, I'm glad that's not me."
Really?
Yeah. I just feel like, you know, I've done that. I'm happy now to be the audience. I'm happy with the work I do and what I, you know, got the chance to do. So,
what was your favourite thing about being on stage?
Thinks at the encore.
If I'm tell honest. Me tell, why? Because you were near the end.
Yeah, but in the near the end, in that sense that you've done all the hard work, and if you're at the stage where you've got an encore, it's gone well, and there's even that vibe in the audience of sort of slight release. You know, all the hard work of the set has happened.
There's you've a kind of the, euphoria.
There's that slight euphoria in the crowd. There's that feeling on stage that the hard work is all behind you. And I did used to come out on stage for the encore with a real sense of sort of relaxation that was quite liberating. And I think if I'd been able to feel like that from the beginning of the set, I'd have
Are you still
enjoyed
nervous?
It more.
Yeah.
Have I got coriander everywhere?
Tell me what I have, won't you?
I will do.
Just because I'm a guest, don't tell me.
I had to go and see a hypnotherapist about it because I just felt like I wasn't kind of being present.
I tried that.
It didn't work?
No. Well, I don't think I wanted it to work, if I'm honest. I think I went a bit sort of, oh, go on then, see if you can do anything about this, but not really.
I think I wanted it to work and I had this... I think it kind of did work. It wasn't like I go into a trance every time I go into on stage. I think he taught me how to enjoy the moment more because I'm such a worrier and I'm already thinking, I've got my mum's fucking saying sing out in my ear, ringing.
Gypsy Rosalie. You know, Gypsy.
Gypsy?
Mm. Yeah.
Did you go and see her?
She's a pushy mum. We saw it on Broadway,
On Broadway as well, with Fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing, but I am the sing out person.
But I don't think I was actually appreciating the people that had bought a ticket and who were in front of me and trying to actually just enjoy interacting with them. And I think everyone does it differently. And I'm not saying that I found the best way.
Mm.
But for me, it gave me so much more pleasure to kind of immerse myself with the crowd. And I think before, especially in the first record, I didn't know what I was doing. And I was kind of apologetic for being on stage.
Yeah.
Because do you feel like you've got a kind of bigger confidence now that you are a writer of, you know, like, do you feel like your persona, like when you go and present, you read an excerpt from, you know, the book, and do you feel more comfortable with that being a singer?
I do. I mean, I feel now like I've got to the stage where everything I do in my life, I feel confident about doing, and I feel like I can handle it. And I'm so, I don't know whether that's, again, just to do with getting older and being a bit more at ease in your own skin.
But you do seem very comfortable with yourself.
Yeah, I think
you know
I
who
am.
You are.
And again, I think accepting even the things I don't want to do and just thinking, okay, well, I don't need to prove that to anyone. You know, I don't have to do this just because other people think I should.
Did you feel like there was an expectation of you carrying on once you'd had children by the label or... Ben, I don't know. Did Ben want to carry on?
Ben would have definitely. And I think, to be fair, I was a bit dishonest about it for a while, even to myself. I think I did that thing of saying, oh, well, I'll have kids, but it won't change anything. You know, which is sort of naive and that thing of you don't realise how much it will change. But I do think for a year or so, I was a bit dishonest and saying to everyone, it'll be fine. We'll go back on tour soon. And actually, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I don't think this is going to happen. But it was quite difficult to actually say that to people. And then there was a period when I remember us having a meeting with, I think, record company and our tour agent. And I just said, look, one solution could be that we do like more festivals, you know, because that's an easier way of playing to a bigger number of people than touring. You know, you could just go and do a festival. So we had a summer where we did a few festivals. And then the last gig I did was the Montreux Jazz Festival.
Oh, nice. How was it?
And it was great. I remember it being quite a good gig and enjoying it. And then on the way back to the airport the next morning, I started feeling sick. And then again the next morning. And then thought, oh, okay. And then I was pregnant with the third child. So at that point, I thought, oh, okay. This is something, life is trying to tell me something here, you know, that actually even doing festivals now is going to be quite hard work. So that was when I stopped completely. So that was the last gig I did, was Montreux Jazz Festival, which seems now 100 years ago to me. It feels like another life.
How long ago was it?
18 years ago, 2000.
Well, I mean, you've touched on this a bit, but how was it being on tour with your boyfriend?
Mm.
I don't know, maybe you never fought or anything, but like, would like it change the atmosphere on stage? Did you feel like you kind of could keep this quite professional? Maybe you didn't need to be professional, I don't know.
Yeah, most of the time it was good, because we did get on mostly very well. Mm. So that was good. I do remember a tour of Japan when we were actually sleeping in separate hotel rooms. And I can't remember why now, but clearly things weren't going so well. And then there was an earthquake in the middle of the night.
And then you got into bed with each
and
other.
I remember coming out of my room going, oh, where's your room? And like fighting my way along the corridor thinking, I'm not going to, after all these years, bloody die in a separate hotel room to you.
Oh, Mum's just bought him pud. Mm. I don't know if you... Are you a pudding person?
I am a pudding person. Yeah, go on.
We're having...
Wow.
Mum, do you want to say what we're having?
It's a chocolate truffle tour.
Thank you very much.
We will not be offended if you don't want to eat all of it.
And yet, and
if,
I will.
If you do, I will respect you.
I'm eating that. Come on.
And then, yeah, some kind of orangey tangerine cream if you want it.
Oh, thank you.
So you're a pudding person. Are you more of a savoury or a sweet person?
No, I think I'm a bit of both, to be honest. I'm happy with anything I'm given. That treat of other people doing your food for you. Oh,
you're a very easy guest. It's just
thank
kind
you.
Of, yeah. This is very good.
It's very good. No, you're not sure?
I think it's too chocolatey. It's
nothing too chocolatey.
If you have enough cream with it,
you
it's
need
perfect.
Cream with it.
You need
definitely.
More cream, obviously. Mm. Yeah.
You definitely do, don't you?
I like it with the meringue bottom.
Mm. Oh,
it's really good. What would be on your death row / desert island meal?
Okay.
That so, you had to have for the rest of your life, or it was, you know, or you are happy to eat before you're about to get executed.
Because I'm not a massive foodie, so I don't have in my mind this sort of, you know, exotic range of dishes. So I think I would choose a meal that would remind me of, I don't know, like food from the past that was. Okay. So in a way, I still have this idea of the classic sort of 1970s dining out meal as being something I still aspire to. So like a great prawn cocktail.
Yes.
You know, prawn cocktails, like when they came back into fashion, I was so delighted because I thought, oh, I love a prawn cocktail. Am I allowed to say that now? Yeah, I am. So I feel like that's allowed. So I would say a prawn cocktail.
With like iceberg lettuce, would you have it with?
Yeah, nice chopped up. I mean, you get a fancy one.
Or do you have it with bread? I haven't had a prawn cocktail for so long, actually.
So nice chopped up iceberg lettuce, Mary Rose sauce. Prawns.
We should do that. We should have done it. Very should nice. Have asked it. Yeah, sorry. That's a good one.
Then I would be worried that I was about to be executed.
But that's shellfish, Tracy.
Oh, God. Now I've...
You've buggered yourself.
I've buggered myself by saying shellfish. Yeah. You so prawns are my exception
Fine.
To shellfish.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
Then... So that's my 70s kind of starter. For my main course, one of my favourite things in the world is melanzana parmigiana.
Oh, me too. The best.
So it would be my main, but it's not
it's
really,
such,
is it a main course?
Well, I don't
you're
know.
Dying. You're dying. You're allowed
if
to
I'm
have
about to die,
want.
I would want to
People
eat a plate
People have it
of,
as a starter, but you're so full once you've eaten it. It is
so
my
I have
best.
It as my main course. I just think it's one of the most delicious
I could have made
in the world.
That
I
made
that this week, actually. It's
I've got
so
two
good.
Isn't it just delicious?
I may nick that.
Take them.
It's just the best thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that would be my main course.
Do you ever make that at home?
Yeah, I can make a really good one.
What's is there a secret ingredient that we should know about?
No, not well.
Do you fry your aubergines first? Yeah, you've got to.
And I mean, the oil content is.
Yeah, you actually.
And so you do all the dripping and drying them, but you've just got to accept that they're deep fried aubergines, essentially.
Yeah.
And then you
That's
make a lovely tomato
so
basil sauce, and then you buy really good mozzarella. And
parmesan as well.
Parmesan in there.
Do you go out for a melanzana Parn and Bajan.
No, not particularly. Although we've got a deli near us, Jacobazzi's Deli, which is the most amazing Italian deli, which I've been going to for 30 years. The same people have been running it for 30 years. Renata, hello.
Probably get a free melanzani now.
They're just wonderful. And the most amazing Italian food. They do, you can go and buy a slice of it and take it home in a little Tupperware.
Oh, lovely.
You know, so.
Lovely. Pudding?
Pudding, well, as you can see, I don't like chocolate.
she has cleared her plate.
Anyone who knows me would say...
Would you like some more?
No, honestly, anyone who knows me would say, well, if there's anything chocolate on the menu, Tracy will have that.
Okay.
So, I mean, it could be that, quite honestly, or fritterolls, or like something like that.
Yes. What would be your drink, then, that you'd have with your meal?
A martini.
Ooh, dirty or just martini?
Just a martini.
Vodka or gin?
Gin.
Tracy, I...
gin martini.
Oh, that is where we do differ. Ooh. I'm a filthy martini girl.
I can with go vodka, with that, though.
But you're a gin.
I'm a gin.
Just with lemon.
Straight up, stressed, yeah. Best drink in the world, I think, honestly.
The mood's
so
clean.
So clean. I mean, it's basically a health drink, isn't it? Clean eating, clean drinking.
Exactly. It works. Yeah. It works. So you're a cocktail girl?
I only really like things like that. I can't be doing with great big, you know, fruity umbrellas. And
I like Cosmos.
Yeah, I like a Cosmo. That's nice. Cosmos. Feel a bit naff ordering a Cosmo now, don't you? Do you know what I mean?
She feels like Sarah Jessica Parker, so that's why
I didn't realise it was from that. But it's
but
just...
please, Mum, you knew it was Sex and the City. Yeah,
but I did latterly, but I'd always like them because they're not too sweet.
No, exactly.
They're kind of fruity, but not too sweet.
They've got a tang to them.
And they do knock your head off, don't they?
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like a drink that gets you straight away. You don't have to...
Would you like some red wine? You're all right.
No, I'm fine.
Do you have any table manners you think are not very good of yours or that you don't like in other people?
Oh, God, I don't know if this counts as table manners, but I did actually tweet this the other day, so I might as well say it out loud. So I said something the other day online about how I could never go on MasterChef and cook pasta. Because my way of checking whether it's done is I take a bit out of the pan on a fork and bite into it. And if it's not done, I spit it out into the sink.
I think that's okay.
That's all right.
Is that all right? Or it's
we're not spitting
terrible.
It back into the saucepan.
But it seemed like it's probably terrible table. It's not quite at the table, though.
Are you watching MasterChef?
Oh, yeah.
Me too, I love
always watch
it.
I love it.
Me too.
Do you watch lots of cookery programmes?
Yeah, I do actually watch
them.
Do you
like Bake Off?
Yeah, I find it really relaxing. Because it's kind of after dinner, isn't it? You've had dinner, you've put everything away, and then you sit down and watch other people cook.
I love it.
So do you have a food crush, like either a critic food crush or a chef food crush that you like, you always go to their recipes?
I mean, I would say Nigel Slater, because I did sort of learn... I'd say I learned how to cook from him because I learned just basic things about what goes with what from reading his books. You know, lemon and basil with chicken is amazing. Rosemary goes with this. Mm. You know, these just, you know what I mean? Just those combinations, which I think before that I hadn't quite just joined up things. I was always working to a specific recipe. But there were a couple of early books he wrote that when I read them, I just thought, oh, it sort of clicked. Okay, so these combinations. So if you've just got a few ingredients in front of you, you know you can make...
Yes.
Something tasty. If you've got a lemon and you've got some garlic and you've got some rosemary, then okay, you're going to be able to make something nice.
Tracy Thorne, thank you so much for coming on Table Manners. It is such a pleasure to meet you finally.
Thank you.
And to learn all about your life. Thank you so much for being on this.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for your amazing lunch. Well, I don't normally eat as well as this on a Monday lunchtime.
Pleasure. Well, Mum, that was lovely.
Well, why are you sounding
it
surprised?
It was a liquid lunch, actually, wasn't it?
Why are you sounding surprised?
No, I really enjoyed it.
You were not sure. You said, why don't I do something else?
I did, but it was absolutely delicious.
And did you think it was delicious, Alice?
Alice, editor, is agreeing. I really liked it because the salmon was so beautifully cooked. I always overcook my salmon.
It's interesting that Tracy watches MasterChef like I do.
Yeah, Tracy Thorne, what an interesting woman.
Very.
I felt really lucky to be able to ask her so many questions about kind of her career and just that confidence that she has that she could just leave
a career behind that so
she
many people want.
She knows who she is, yeah, Jessie, yeah. And she's serene.
Really serene.
And she felt calming to be with because she's not anxious, she's not busy, she's just very, very calm.
And she did eat all your pudding.
I know.
She's a chocolate like fan.
I know. And it was quite sickly, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I just went to Cobox and I feel like I've undone every good thing that I did in Cobox by eating that slice of chocolate cake. But it was really good.
There was 4 bars of chocolate and a whole tub of cream in there.
Right, back to Cobox I go.
Yep.
Thank you so much for listening to Table Manners. I've been Jessie Ware.
I'm her mum, Lenny.
Mum, you've got to get better at this.
What do you want me to say?
You're not leaving an answer phone, like, message.
Okay. I don't know what you want me to say.
You say it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Table Manners.
But why do you do this, like, faux polite? You're not polite. Like, you're opinionated.
Thanks for listening to Table Manners. Give us 5 stars.
That's the woman that I was searching for. Thank you. Music you've heard on Table Manners is by Peter Duffy and Pete Fraser.
And the podcast is produced by Cup and Nuzzle.
Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.